Good day, and welcome to the Anik Financial Europe conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Chris Ross-Roberts. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Kathy. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Anik Financial Europe S.A. SICAV RAIF quarterly investor presentation for the period ending the 30th of June, 2020. Thank you for attending in these continued unprecedented times, and I do hope that you and all of your families remain safe and well. We ask for your patience with today's presentation, as we're all speaking from different locations. As set out on page two of the presentation, Justin, Ed, and I will take you through the presentation, and then we'll open the line to the Q&A session at the end. In addition to the Q&A session, please remember you can send any questions through to info@anikapfe.com or through the website at www.anikapfe.com, where we'll endeavour to reply to them as soon as we can. Details can be found at the end of the presentation. Before we begin, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page one of the presentation, which highlights that the presentation is produced solely for informational purposes and cautions against any forward-looking statements, and that by attending this call and reviewing the presentation, you are agreeing to the limitations set out on page one of the presentation. Justin will start by providing an overview of the quarter, and Ed will provide an operational view, update on the platform, and a country-by-country review. I will then provide an update on the financial highlights before Justin concludes, and then we'll open the line for questions. I'll now hand over to Justin.
Thanks, Chris. In April, we completed what we believed to be a prudent reforecast and markdown in the midst of a widespread lockdown and a highly uncertain outlook across Europe. Whilst we believe there will be further challenges to come, we're pleased to have significantly outperformed our reforecast by over 150%, providing additional headroom ahead of higher targets heading into year-end. Needless to say, we have been hugely impressed by the job done by our team and across all of our servicing partners. Without question, the significant level of investment and further development within AIFE Asset Management, now comprising 22 FTEs internally, including a new head of Italy based in Milan, as well as now almost 50 FTEs in Phoenix Asset Management, supported by a further 40 data analysts in India driving our Minerva IT platform, have ensured a consistently high level of engagement and ever deeper insights into our portfolio as the backdrop continues to evolve rapidly. This outperformance, most notably in Italy and Portugal, further improves the company's liquidity position, now totaling over 90 million euros available to take advantage of emerging opportunities going forward. However, much as we did in 2019 as markets seemed to peak, we have remained highly prudent in deployment thus far in 2020. AIFE's low-cost operating model is underlined by a total operating cost ratio of under 35% at the end of Q2, even following a period of relatively low collections due to the pandemic. This allows us to be patient, as economic realities take time to sink in, and both buyers and sellers continue to adjust expectations. Given available liquidity and only circa 6 million euros deployed so far in 2020 at significantly higher target returns than seen in recent years, we do expect to capitalize on a pipeline which is growing once again across a wide variety of NPLs and direct real estate opportunities in particular. This is expected to drive leverage, which currently stands at 4.36 times net debt to last 12 months adjusted EBITDA, higher heading into year-end. I'll now turn it over to Ed Green to provide a further update on AIFE's operational performance.
Thank you, Justin. So turning to page seven, in the context of an unprecedented situation in Europe with shutdown of the court systems, close down of associated public bodies, and suspension of property auctions, I've been really pleased with the performance of our local units and servicing partners in maximising cash collections amidst these headwinds. As Justin alluded to, the investments made in our digital platform Minerva, our data analytics team, and the continued strengthening of our local on-the-ground presence has allowed us to be highly targeted in directing our resource to focus on those collection strategies that have been most productive through the lockdown. As you can see from this page, this focus on a targeted list of initiatives has enabled us to outperform our revised forecast in our core jurisdictions. And I'll now go into more detail as to what have been the key drivers of outperformance across our different markets. So starting with page 8, Italy. Collections in the quarter total 10.2 million, 7 million above our forecast. The main driver of this outperformance was achieved through a tactical initiative focused on cash in court, i.e. the proceeds from the resolutions of secured NPL assets currently in the court distribution process. Our team on the ground in Italy engaged persistently with judges during the lockdown period, pushing for virtual hearings to enable final distribution of cash from these more straightforward cases. And out of the 10.2 million cash generated during the quarter, 7.4 million was achieved through cash in court releases, comparing to an average of 4.9 million generated over previous quarters. Or expressed differently, cash in court represented 72% of quarterly collections as compared to 37% in previous quarters. Despite the slowdown in other parts of the court process, we continue to remain confident in our forecasts as a result of the strong collateralization of our Italian portfolio, where our underwriting and ongoing reforecasting approach assumes a defensive recovery strategy for our judicial processes. Our new head of Italy, Simone Tiragallo, who joined the platform last week, is now rolling out a new program of initiatives to ensure we can maintain momentum to the year end and maximize opportunities to strike amicable arrangements with debtors. Moving on to Portugal on page 9, Portugal observed comparable outperformance to Italy during the quarter, delivering 7.5 million versus a target of 2.5. Like Italy, part of the outperformance was achieved through driving cash releases from resolved cases through persistent engagement with judges and receivers. In addition, the team on the ground have capitalized on the continued strength in the residential property markets across Portugal to drive property, i.e. REO sales. This has been achieved through effective digital marketing, including virtual viewings, and driving completions through a local network of public notaries known to our team on the ground. We've achieved these results whilst continuing to protect ERC, and based on individual asset level expectations, i.e. what we underwrote each individual property to, the resolutions on assets achieved thus far this year have been on average 13% ahead of the ERC expectations 1-3. And while this is only 6 months data, we continue to remain confident in our ERC in Portugal, which like Italy is underpinned by a high degree of collateralization. Turning to page 10, Spain. Spain observed marginal outperformance within the quarter. And given the shutdown of the court system, activities primarily being focused on closing out a pipeline of amicable negotiations with debtors. And through the ongoing tactical engagement of our local team, we achieved 10% outperformance on gross cash collections in the quarter. With the courts now reopened, our local teams are focused on engaging with key courts in order to ensure progress and momentum on higher value cases. While the headroom between collateral value and the ERC value is lower than in Portugal and Spain, this reflects our valuation approach in Spain. Is lower than in Portugal and Italy. This reflects our valuation approach in Spain, which envisages a prudent liquidation value for a for sale as opposed to a more standard market valuation. And during the quarter, following on from the granular revaluation exercise that was undertaken in Q2, we have achieved asset resolutions at 3% above ERC value. And finally, on page 11, our other markets. Across Romania, Poland, and UK, we achieved 3.2 million versus a target of 1.1 in the quarter, through adopting the same thematic initiatives as in our core markets. In the UK, our performing loan book delivered very consistent performance in line with revised expectations. In Poland, we were able to drive performance ahead of plan through cash and court releases. And particularly strong performance was observed in Romania, where an asset sale campaign delivered 16% outperformance on ERC at an individual asset level. So in summary, a very strong relative performance in the quarter, where the investments made in Central Analytics, our digital platform Minerva, and our local teams on the ground have enabled us to maximise cash collections amidst the headwinds. I'll now hand back to Chris to walk through how this translates into the financial highlights.
Thank you, Ed. If you turn to page 13, key financial highlights, AFE financials. As I stated last quarter, quarter-on-quarter comparisons are clearly impacted by the amount of previous deployment of capital into new portfolios each year. In 2018, we deployed $161 million compared to $36 million in 2019 and $3.6 million year-to-date in 2020. As we increased our hurdle rate for investments in 2019 and remained disciplined throughout the year, and we remain patient this year to seek better return opportunities. I therefore provide comments against the forecast, which is based off the reforecast we did at the end of March 2020. As you heard from Ed, we had a very positive Q2 in all of our core geographies. H1 gross triple collections were $43.6 million, cumulatively ahead of the forecast we did in March by $14.3 million, not withstanding the onset of COVID-19 restrictions being enforced for most of the quarter. Revenue is just behind plan, with deployment of $3.6 million taking place at the end of the quarter, and thus no revenue in the first half. Adjusted EBITDA for H1 at $27.6 million is $11.7 million ahead of forecast, driven by better-than-expected collections in Q2. ERC at $479 million is lower than forecast, due to higher-than-forecast collections in the period and marginally lower deployment plan. Leverage at 4.63 times at the end of June is better than forecast, driven by higher-than-adjusted EBITDA. Total operating costs, which includes both collection costs and overhead, at a total of $14.9 million for H1, were higher than forecast in euro terms, but lower as a percentage of collections, and reflected the strong outperformance of collections in Q2. Overall, our cost structure is predominantly variable, with a low level of fixed overhead, and I will provide more detail on the next slide, which is the modelling you may be doing. Turning to page 14, market-leading cost structure. AFE has always tried to maintain a low centralised fixed cost structure, provided the opportunity to be selected into which asset types, geographies, and when it deploys capital. The company works with a panel of services across Europe, which it enhances through its own master servicing team, to monitor, challenge, and drive new strategies to optimise value. Services are predominantly paid on collections, and legal costs are expensed as incurred, and over the medium term, are linked to collection volumes. As outlined in the last quarter, we're continuing with our plan to invest into master servicing. From the 1st of April, AFE provided at arm's length master servicing to assets owned by AnaCap Credit Opportunities Fund, as well as AFE. We anticipate these fees to grow over time. In the course of June, these fees generated approximately $600,000 of income, and these are recognised as other income within the financial statements, and offset the increase in overhead this quarter. The consolidation of master servicing into AFE will allow efficiency across the business and help drive overall performance, in particular as the businesses are likely to co-invest in a wide range of assets over time. The overall quantum of fixed costs is still low and will remain low. This allows for a patient level of deployment, flexibility in which asset type we deploy, and where we're deploying capital in the future. The time of a downturn of collections also means that any overall cash demand to cover fixed costs is relatively small. Expected annual overheads remain consistent with the full year estimate of $13 million given at the March presentation. Collection costs do vary over time, depending on the maturity of the portfolio and the mix of assets being collected at any particular point in time. They're generally in the range of 15-22% of collections. Going to page 15, ERC comparison Q4 19 versus Q1 2020 versus Q2 2023 forecast. Let me start by explaining the graph. Gold bar shows ERC presented in the Q4 2019 results presentation and shows ERC by year forecast at that time. The dark blue bar charts show the ERC by year following the March 2020 reforecast exercise and the same set of assets that were owned 31st of December 2019. So you can see a static snapshot of the changes in turnover ERC. The lighter blue bar shows the current forecast having completed a detailed update to the March 2020 reforecast, but maintaining the same overall macro assumptions around the timing impacts following COVID-19 restrictions posed by European governments. The shaded green bar shows actual collections for Q1 and H1. You'll note that following better than anticipated collections in Q2, we've increased our short-term forecast for collections in 2020 to $82 million, an increase of $17 million, of which $14.7 million was achieved in Q2. The improvement in collections in the short term has been mostly from acceleration of positions expected to close in 21 and 23. As you're aware, governments across Europe impose restrictions on judicial processes, real estate auctions, and notarial services. As a reminder, much of our portfolio is secured and backed by underlying collateral that requires legal processes that were not available during lockdown. We have, as forecast, therefore observed delays in planned activity and believe that this will have a continued impact predominantly on timing. In March 2020, we had assumed that legal activity is delayed for 6 months and there will be a slow recovery. For 2020, this means that collections in the period April to December are forecast cumulatively at 63% on the December 19 forecast, an improvement against our March forecast that assumed 50%. Our shape of recovery means that collections curve compared to December 19 forecast is cumulatively 73% by December 21, gradually recovering to 95% by December 24. While impossible to forecast with certainty, we do anticipate that with court closures in 3 months and then a backlog of cases, that a 6 month delay to all legal processes is an appropriate assumption. And then a slow economic recovery that impacts the time to sell is the best estimate at the moment. These macro assumptions are consistent with our March forecast. We will keep this under constant review. Based on collections to date in Q3, we estimate collections from July and August to be 11.9 million, 14% ahead of our revised forecast. This should not be taken as an indication of expected future outperformance, thus reflect the better-than-expected start to the second half. Whilst we've been successful in bringing forward expected collections compared to the March reforecast, we've chosen to remain prudent. They've chosen not to reflect any timing improvement in book value of assets, given the continued uncertainty. We can turn to page 16, key debt metrics and capital structure. The graph on the top left shows leverage over ERC at the 30th of June of 69.2%. This is within RCF covenants of 75% and a slight increase from March 2020. Planned deployment in H2 should have a positive impact on the LTV ratio. Super senior revolving credit facility ratio is well within covenant levels at zero, again to 25% max, reflecting the low utilisation of the RCF and strong cash on balance sheet at the end of June 2020. Net debt to adjusted EBITDA is 4.36 times. We'd expect this to increase during the year as the impact of COVID on the forecast collection is brought into the LTM ratio before improving in 21 and 22. We maintain a long-term target of between 3 and 3.5 times. LTM adjusted EBITDA at 76 million is down on last year. Clearly in the short term, LTM EBITDA will be adversely impacted by the lower level of collections we are currently forecasting. On the bottom of the page is analysis of AFE's debt maturity. No debt is maturing until July 22. Our current liquidity position is strong relative to our cost base, with 42 million of cash and undrawn facility of 51 million at due, giving us 93 million of available liquidity for additional collections. In 2020, we expect to deploy around 65 million, but more if we find attractive. We have significantly increased the hurdle rate for all new investments and we expect any deployment to be weighted to the fourth quarter. I'll now hand over to Justin for an update on strategy and outlook for AFE. Justin.
Thanks, Chris. In summary, we're pleased with the significant level of outperformance so far across geographies, but remain intensely focused on driving performance in the face of further potential headwinds to come. We believe AFE's ability to remain nimble in deployment, but highly engaged, particularly when challenges arise, underpins exactly what the company has always aimed to be. We do not expect to chase volume when pricing is not right, but we do expect AFE Asset Management to be able to manage assets effectively through cycles on both AFE's own balance sheet and in ANICAP managed funds. As the economic backdrop continues to evolve, we believe it will take time for markets to adjust to new realities. Although the pipeline is growing noticeably again across unsecured and secured NPLs, as well as attractive direct real estate opportunities, and target returns appear to be increasing across the industry, it may take time for pricing to adjust accordingly and for large volumes of assets to trade. AFE's predominantly variable cost base is what allows for patience, even as the company's liquidity position continues to improve. We will, of course, remain mindful of leverage, but do expect it to rise as we deploy further capital and collections ramp back up, following not only the pandemic, but also an extended period in 2019 and thus far in 2020 of relatively low capital deployment for AFE. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. We're now happy to take any questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment. We will take our first question from Rory McLaughlin with GSO Capital.
Thanks for the presentation and congrats on the outperformance versus reforecast. Just a quick one for me, and apologies if I missed it previously, but I'm just wondering, in terms of, I suppose, the overcollection in Q2 that you've seen, was any of it really driven by timing from Q3 that you had expected previously? And I suppose, are you providing any guidance for, I suppose, full year? Obviously, you did previously, but obviously, your performance kind of puts it in a different perspective, really. Thanks.
Shall I answer that one for you? In terms of a full year target of our existing asset base, that was set out on the GRC graph, so that's 82 million. So that's an increase from 65 million that we estimated previously.
Perfect. Got it.
So that will then take, if you then look at that, and you can also see the collections to date. Normally, we expect a slightly higher
Q4. So we'll be looking around 15 or 16 for Q3 and the balance in Q4.
Perfect. Thank you.
Once again, that is star one for questions. We will take our next question from Sunil Sodhi with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me, please?
Yes.
Yeah.
So just first question, I was curious, the comment you made around the cost to collect being higher on the unsecured side for NPLs in Italy versus the secured, because I think generally the understanding was that, yeah, the costs on the secured side are bulky, whereas the cost on the unsecured side are a little bit more kind of on an ongoing basis. So just want to understand your thinking in terms
of
that.
When you look at percentages, then pretty much I think you'll find everywhere. Unsecured is more expensive because the average balance unsecured is quite low. So if you're talking monetary terms, then clearly if you're selling an asset for $100,000 and paying 5% or 10%, then it's a large amount of money. There's a very relatively low percentage. Where on the unsecured books, you've got average balances of, you know, $5,000 to $20,000, quite often in litigation. So the cost percentage is much, much higher than 5 or 10%.
Right. Okay. No, that makes sense. Thank you. And
but it's
and
much
just,
more
in
terms, yeah. Go ahead.
Ah, okay. Cool. And just secondly, in terms of just again, I think you might have addressed it in previous presentations on the valuation. So, in terms of the different approach being used for Spain versus Portugal and Italy, in terms of the collateral versus the ERC. So, if you could just elaborate a little bit, please, in terms of why you are using differently for two countries versus then Spain.
Yeah, sure. I can take that one. Yes, I think in Spain we changed our approach to ensure that the, you know, the valuation metrics that we were capturing reflected a conservative sort of for sale value for the assets, whereas in Portugal and Italy we've maintained an approach which looks more at a market valuation approach based on a, you know, willing buyer and a willing seller. That reflects, I think, perhaps some of the more recent activity that we've done in Spain. We continue to obviously track asset performance and performance against the RCO expectations at a very granular basis. And as I said in the presentation today, over the course of Q2, we've seen consistent outperformance against our ERC value across all jurisdictions.
Right. Okay. So it's more in terms of, as you gain more experience, then probably you can then look at it through the lens of Italy and Portugal, given that these are probably slightly older in terms of you being more experienced in those geographies and more older purchases.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's a good summary. I think we've erred on the side of the more conservative in Spain.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you.
Take our next question from Kunal Shah with Warwick Capital Partners.
Hi guys, thanks for taking the question. Just in terms of capital deployment go forward, is there any particular area that you're seeing more interesting pipeline develop, either by geography or sub-asset class? And apologies if I missed the number, but provided guidance or you provided color on how much capital was deployed for H1, did you provide guidance for what you expect to deploy for H2, or does that remain to be seen?
Okay, great. I'll let Justin answer the first part. In terms of the second part, we spent about $65 million in aggregate for the year was our full-year target.
So as far as where, I think things are still evolving everywhere, but certainly Italy remains a very active market. There's a pipeline that continues to I guess, restart on a primary basis, but also a very significant growth opportunity in secondary sales. Secondary sales of either parts or all of portfolios that had previously transacted, in many cases opportunities that we had prior visibility to. The deployment that we've done so far to date takes advantage of some of that. It often means aggregating smaller portfolios, which we think is an interesting strategy for us. It's consistent with finding more off-the-run opportunities, things that aren't necessarily going to large auctions. And we're also set up extremely well in the Italian market to execute efficiently, given our team experience, but also the team at Phoenix on the ground. So it means we can do a large volume of smaller transactions. So we expect that to remain active. We're also seeing direct follow-on opportunities in Portugal, where, as you've seen, we've had some strong recent experience. I think the market there also remains active. We're seeing opportunities, you know, continue to, I guess it's fair to say, restart after a period of slowing down. And then our other core geographies, each of them have pipeline, but I don't think it's necessarily of the same volume of opportunity that we're seeing in those two markets alone, particularly given a relatively small budget for the whole year, meaning we can afford to cherry pick where we think we're best placed. And then the final thing I'd say on the direct real estate side, where we're seeing both distress, we're seeing REO as well as distressed individual direct real estate opportunities, we're seeing a continued growth there also. And that includes across our core geographies, as well as some opportunities in geographies newer for AIF, but not newer for ANICAP. So our focus on other Western and Northern European geographies, including the UK and France, is starting to increase as well, as there's, you know, a potential for significantly improved valuations going forward.
Okay, thanks very much.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. It appears we have no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the conference back to your host for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you very much, everybody, for attending, and look forward to catching up at the next quarter. Thank you.
That concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.